In mid-May, like 46,000 others, I read an article published on LinkedIn, What My MBA at Harvard Did Not Teach Me. And, like over 1,500 others at the time of this recording, I shared it via social media because I was so impressed with the article. A little later that day, a friend of the author emailed me and said that this piece was the third most popular article on LinkedIn on the day it was published, and that Accepted could post it on our blog, which we happily did, and yes, I'll link to it from the show notes. I communicated directly with the author and asked if he would be willing to be interviewed for Mission Straight Talk, and fortunately, he said yes. He is our very special guest today, and we'll learn more about him and his Harvard Business School experience in just a minute. Hello, I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Before I introduce our special guest, I would like to acquaint you with three resources at Accepted that help applicants get into top MBA programs and one that is specific to Harvard Business School. The first is MBA Admissions A to Z, 26 Great Tips. It's a free download and the name says it all. The second is MBA Admission for Smarties, the MBA Admissions Guide that I co-authored. And there is a nominal cost with that. And then the third is the Accepted Guide to Getting into Harvard Business School, which is a recorded webinar I gave last year. And until I have one for this year, which will probably wait until the application goes up, you can view last year's version. When we schedule the one for this year, we'll put a registration form for the webinar on the page that I'm linking to. And ultimately, the night that the 2015 version will be on that page too. So whether you want a general MBA admission strategy or a HBS-focused webinar, those resources will get you started. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the LinkedIn article's author, Ben Faugh. Ben graduated in 2008 from West Point with a BS in economics. He won a Bronze Star for serving in Iraq from fall 2008 to fall 2009, where he led some 300-plus combat patrols and managed civil leadership of 70,000 people. He returned to the U.S. and then served as a special assistant to the South Pacific Division commander in San Francisco. After leaving the military in 2011, he worked in supply chain management and in equity research and then joined the HBS class of 2014. Trust me, I could say a lot more about Ben after just a little bit of research into his background, but I want to have time to actually talk to him and let him tell his own story. I'm honored to have Ben Faugh on Admission Straight Talk. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks, Linda. It's great to be invited on here, and thanks for the very warm and maybe too generous introduction.
I don't think so. Ben, I will assume that a large number of people listening may not have caught your excellent article, even though it was as popular as I indicated on LinkedIn. Can you summarize it briefly?
Yeah, Linda. So basically, we had a few people who worked with me on this article, and a couple of us had conversations about, we really took a lot out of the experience, and we think it might be different things than a lot of people might expect, or maybe the stereotype is of the Harvard MBA experience. And so we, the big threads were what we really didn't learn at HBS, and that's why we came up with that title. And what we kind of walked through was what we think people might find stereotypical, or maybe in our case, in some of our cases, what we actually imagine the experience might be in terms of maybe a funnel to Wall Street, maybe a lot of people who are very focused on financial gain over authentic relationships and threads of this nature. And so we kind of tried to identify those threads that people thought we might have learned and then kind of explain how we actually learned something quite contrary. And one, big example that we tried to highlight with, some graphics as well being that, a lot of graduates of Harvard Business School are going to the West Coast, and in fact, many other areas, very different areas than Wall Street and New York City, and getting into different jobs. And then there's, this huge thread of relationships that I think people maybe aren't fully aware of at times that far supersedes financial and monetary gain. And so that's kind of what we tried to do, is tell our own personal story that we experienced and tell it in a way that we thought would be impactful to others.
In reading the article and occasionally rereading it for today's show, I was struck that you seem almost on a mission in writing it, that It wasn't just, well, let me put up a post. I feel like writing this. You know, you really felt like you had to accomplish something, like you had myth-busting on your mind. Why do you think the stereotypes are there?
I mean, I think there's, you know, some of it's to do with press and media. I think some of it's probably to do with still maybe a taste in people's mouth based on, you know, financial crisis and
the recession,
Wall Street involvement, maybe Enron issues that, you know, I think where the same thing I see from West Point at times, you find because of the existence of, honestly, a lot of people who've done a lot of good and a lot of people in general, that occasional bad apple will get a phenomenal amount of attention.
Absolutely.
And it becomes, you know, it's very tough to counter that because that's in the case of maybe a Main Street person or person in middle America or any number of maybe rural places, that's all that maybe makes it to their ears, and that's the lasting impression. And so, you know, a lot of people have asked me, that's one of the reasons this, I got into writing this was, you know, what did you learn there? And that's, you know, how this small group along with me started working on this project. Well, what did we learn? What are the threads that we'll walk away with? And are these the threads we expected going in? And are these the threads our friends and family kind of expected when we started? And I just think we found these real big gaps, to be honest. And so that's what got us excited. And I think what turned it into more of a mission than just let's throw a post up and see what happens.
Now, in our brief correspondence, you wrote that you had a transformational experience at HBS. And, of course, that's one of the things that HBS brags very much about. It brags that it provides it. No, I shouldn't say brag. It claims to provide a transformational experience. In what way were you transformed? How are you different today than you were 2 years ago?
Yeah, and I think this may seem surprising to some, but our dean actually mentioned the same word. Dean Noria mentioned these when we came back from our summers and started the second year of the business school. He's like, you know, I hope for many of you this has already been transformational. If not, I hope the second year is transformational. And the irony behind his words was really that in my own case, I felt like I'd already had a transformational first year, and I felt like the second year has been transformational yet again. And the key points to me from the first year were just getting more than just a lot of basic foundational business acumen and you know, financial acumen and these sorts of skills, maybe hard skills. I also had really lived and breathed the idea of business and the idea of you know, doing something that you really have a passion for. And mm-hmm. I think that those threads, along with the relationships I built that first year, were just incredibly transformational in how I viewed the world, how I viewed businesses, and how I viewed my potential to make an impact. And then I think for me, the second year was really a lot more focused. And, you know, we talked in a little bit in the article about more is better. And I think that's a lot of what I learned in the first year, but was transformed by in the second year. I really had...
You learned the opposite.
Very key. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So these people I had some encounters with maybe the first year, I was able to become a lot closer with during that second year. Mm-hmm. And instead of doing maybe 10 things, I found myself doing 2 things, but doing them on a more deliberate level, I guess. And I think that the feedback thread comes from that as well. I mean, some of the feedback I've gotten this year, and some I've sorted out, some not, has just been amazing. To be honest, it's allowed development on things that I really didn't see gaps in my own, either the way I was managing time, the way I was relating to people. And I think that's a really special situation when you're in a group of peers who want to see you succeed, want to see you improve, and, you know, kind of allow you to become a better version of yourself.
What do you think in terms of, just to try and get a little bit more specific, in terms of, again, how do you relate to people differently? Or can you be a little bit more concrete? Like, you mentioned that you now will focus on 2 things instead of trying to do 10. So you probably relate more deeply or commit more deeply to the 2 activities as opposed to tearing yourself into pieces to get to 10. Can you give another example? Am I correct in my interpretation of what you just said?
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, I think a great example is I was probably somewhat involved with maybe three or four different clubs and probably, numerous other small social activities as a first-year student. Mm-hmm. And really, all the way from the beginning of the second year, I had a small group of people, some of which include co-authors of this, who I met with every single week. And we met for anywhere from an hour and a half to 2.5 hours in an organized setting that was very kind of structured. We just made a commitment we would always meet. And then we met, you know, outside of that as well. And then I had another dear friend who I formed a routine of an exercise routine with that we would do basically 5-6 days a week. So instead of having all these kind of scattered and, you know, close to 10 things, it became, you know, maybe it's 3 things a day or 2 things a day, but it's in a very small group. It's very focused. And I think for me, at least, it gets to this point where you, instead of just knowing maybe the person's name and you know a lot of their own story, you're actually at the point where you can tell from a look on their face in 2 seconds whether they're happy that day, whether they're upset. Maybe even had to have an idea of what they're upset about because you really know that person well. And you've got a far closer relationship.
Right. What did you like best about your HBS experience? And here I'm talking, I mean, I know a lot of students will just say the people, but let's try and be a little more specific than that.
Yeah, so for me, to get a lot more specific, it's never being inside my comfort zone, for me at least. And some of that's because of the choices I've made, because of who I've associated with, because of maybe a course I've taken, but it's been, to me, a phenomenal part of the experience, I think, and you're probably familiar with it too, and it's so easy in life, I think, to get into a comfort zone, to get into a routine and rhythm of things that you kind of understand and have some amount of expertise in, maybe. And I think for me here, because of a variety of reasons, some probably because I'm coming from a military and, you know, career switching, some because I, haven't lived in 7,000 different countries and, speak 7 languages. And so as a result, for me, it's every situation, every day there's been at least a situation where I'm well outside my comfort zone, either meeting with someone who has a very different background than me, meeting with someone who's worked very different jobs than me, or engaged in class material that's very foreign to me. And as a result, I think I've been able to experience far more accelerated growth rate because of that, you know, huge gap that I can just always work towards filling.
Now, do you think that that being outside your comfort zone is a part, an intrinsic part of the HBS experience, or do you think that's something that you created for yourself within the HBS experience, and that you took advantage of opportunities that HBS provides?
That's a great question, Linda. I think it's a little bit of both. I think for almost everyone, there'll be many experiences here that will push them outside of their comfort zone. I feel like there's almost no one who will never be outside their comfort zone, but at the same time, I think, if you're deliberate about choosing things that won't put you outside, you can find yourself, particularly probably within situations in the second year, more inside your comfort zone, or if you're deliberate, as I was, you'll find yourself still remaining probably almost constantly outside. And so I think this system is designed, in my experience at least, and from what I can pick up on from others who've been here, to put you outside at some point in time or another, if not many times. However, if you want to, you have enough control over that second year to make it to some extent customized for you, and so it could be less outside your comfort zone in theory if you wanted it to be.
As you could coast a little bit more, but I mean, I think if you think about it a little bit, any good school. And this is not denigrating Harvard at all, but any good education, how about that, has to put you outside your comfort zone. Otherwise, you're not growing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly, Linda.
What could be improved, in your opinion, at Harvard Business School?
I think that Dean Noya is, as you're probably far more familiar than I am, he's very much open to kind of questioning if things are perfect, and if they're not perfect, how he can improve upon them. And I think that's something he's already working hard towards as far as everything from, I know he's got some initiatives he's launched, which I know you're probably more familiar with, but as far as how many female protagonists are in certain cases. And there's initiatives going on as far as how he thinks about building out the field course, which is, you know, a fairly new introduction right. to the Harvard Business School experience. And, you know, I found to be phenomenal. But no one here is going to stand up and say, hey, field is 100% perfect. We can't improve it. It can never be better. They're very open, at least in my experience. Everyone has been very open about, hey, we really think we're onto something, and we're going to make it better every year. And to be honest, I experienced with something that I thought was phenomenal. I know from coming just from conversations I had with people from the class of 2013, I think there was a dramatic improvement between the class of 2013 and the class of 2014. And just talking to friends of mine in 2015, I think it's improved yet again.
It's fantastic.
And, you know, it's just a big task to try to send 1,000 people plus, or around 1,000 to, you know, countries all over the world for an immersive experience with a foreign company, and then to try to have, you know, just literally dozens and dozens of teams start businesses in a very short timeline. These are incredibly challenging, just logistical tasks. And so I think, you know, it's one of the things that will continue to be improved on. And I saw some of those gaps, and I'm already seeing them fixed while I've been here. And I think they're going to continue to create that program and create it into something even more exciting and even more beneficial to the students.
Right. Well, I'm sure given your background in logistics, you probably have a greater appreciation for the logistical challenge, but certainly trying to get 1,000 people to, I don't know, I guess 250 different places if they're in groups of four or whatever number of different places, and to have a meaningful, valuable experience, you don't have to be an expert in logistics to realize it's a logistical nightmare.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're trying to, you know, all the problems that will come up. To be honest, there's always going to be unique problems as far as little things that we don't think about, like a person's traveled to Venezuela and they have, you know, a passport that has a visa that allows them to enter, you know, maybe a country in Africa from the U.S. but not from Venezuela.
Oh,
how do you unpack that and make it work? These are the sorts of things that, you know, how can you plan for all of them? Well, it's hard to, but they did a phenomenal job, and from what I understand this last year, it was even more successful.
That's great. Now, you mentioned some of the gender issues. Last September, there was a lengthy New York Times article about Harvard Business School and its attempts to break down some gender stereotypes and roles and improve the treatment of women at HBS. According to these articles, Harvard Business School was literally and consciously trying to change behavior and attitudes. Did you ever feel that these attempts were heavy-handed or bordering on social engineering as opposed to education? And, you know, there can be certainly a very fuzzy line between, social engineering and education. What would be your take on that?
You know, my experience was very positive in these sorts of arenas, and it's not incredibly different from, you know, different level, but same general problem of some of the issues that we saw both in the Army and at West Point as far as how we build out the right experience for every single person. How do we promote diversity in an inclusive way that makes sure everyone realizes that they're, you know, incredibly important, valuable part of the team? And, you know, I never felt in my own experience here like there was anything heavy-handed. You know, it's a challenge. It's to some extent, you know, there'll be a critic, I think, with any action you take.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in my own experience, at least, it could be an anomaly one, and maybe I was, you know, missed out on something that went on that was, you know, different than the norm. But it feels like it's been a very natural, organic progression in a very positive direction. And, you know, just judging from what I've seen and heard from Dean Noria, he's really taking a lot of responsibility in terms of, hey, we can do better, we will do better. And I know he gave some remarks, I think, in the Bay Area to a group of alumni where he really said, this is something I'm apologizing for because I don't think we've, you know, done as much as we could. And I think that's pretty courageous to take that sort of step. And to me, what could end up being an incredibly exciting direction to kind of position Harvard Business School as a leader in moving the country forward in a very positive direction.
Great. Wonderful answer. Thank you. I read a few of your blog posts in preparing for our call today, and also a piece you posted on startupguide.com. I was most impressed with a short post you wrote about a new way to start a day, and we'll also link to that. And you indicated you want to take 3 steps every day to start your day. So what are those 3 steps? Or do you still take them before I go on? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I talked about, if I recall this, and I'll check this to make sure.
I actually have them.
Oh, even better than that.
I have them in my hand. How will I brighten the day of another person in the course of events today? What will I do today to deliberately better myself? And how can I err in the direction of kindness?
Yeah, I definitely still think about these things. I actually had some of these written on the wall in my room at one point in time. I just think there's something to be said for being deliberate in each day. And I think at times I've probably not done the best job of this, and I still make that, you know, fail at that from time to time, if not on a very regular basis. But I guess
Give yourself credit for the attempt. Okay, for the commitment.
Yeah, I found that though that, you know, having these you know, sorts of basics kind of in mind at the beginning, mm-hmm. has been good for me, and it kind of puts them, in my own experience at least, it puts them, by going through them at the beginning, it kind of puts them in the back of my mind throughout the day, which then later in the day when things are coming up and, you know, you're busy with this task and that task, you come back to them, and maybe you find that instance. In my own case, especially the first whole year here, I've found interesting opportunities just in crossing people to be able to say something encouraging, and whether it be to a classmate or maybe it's a faculty member, or maybe it's a staff member here at the school, I found the opportunity to say something encouraging and brighten their day. While it encouraged them, it also encouraged me as well. And so it's just a win-win situation that I think can't be overstated, and it can probably be done by many more to make the world a little bit better place.
I completely agree. But this kind of goes back to the how we started this whole thing. These aren't values normally associated with the military, with HBS, or with MBAs. I think it's a wonderful, beautiful way to start a day. But is the stereotype wrong, or do you feel your focus is somewhat unusual?
So I guess I think there's two parts to that. I think the stereotype has, you know, it's built for a reason. It doesn't exist for no reason. I think there's probably two threads that are interesting that are kind of coinciding. I think one is, and we're seeing here at Harvard Business School, but we're not alone. I think this is a trend across the board. We're seeing more and more talk of things like creating shared value, social enterprises, sustainable impact, sustainable business models. That doesn't just mean, I think, sustainable as far as a competitive advantage. I think many times this involves the environment. It involves, you know, a thoughtful way to think about an entire supply chain and how we're treating people in that supply chain, whether it be workers or contractors, et cetera. And I think that it's very real. I think the people going into nonprofits from business school is very real and very significant. And I think while I may be a little bit of an anomaly, that there aren't maybe tons of prior military people who are heavily focused on these particular issues, I think you might find more than you'd suspect. I know in my own case, we've got a couple of women who are West Point class of 2008 and the class of 2015 here at the business school at Harvard alone, who are very focused on very impactful businesses that they're going to be pushing forward on a more of an entrepreneurial vein, but they're not alone. I feel like this is a very interesting trend at the business schools. It's very exciting of more people looking at how they're going to use the